Ian Dunt has been bodily abducted by aliens, but ready to step into his capacious shoes is Naomi Smith. Naomi is, of course, a chief executive of Best for Britain, a regular guest on the Oh God, What Now podcast alongside Ian Dunt. And talking about stepping into shoes, we're going to look at Scotland, where the SNP has elected a new leader to fill the big ones of Nicola Sturgeon. Naomi, welcome to the programme. Introduce us to the Scottish National Party's new boss.
Well, good evening, Philip. And yes, his name is Humza Yousaf. So he's a Glaswegian, born to first-generation immigrant family. And he's been a member of the Scottish Parliament, so an MSP, for over a decade now. I think he was first elected back in 2011. He got a ministerial position a year later in 2012. He's held the international aid brief, the justice brief, transport brief, and then most recently he was health minister for Scotland during the pandemic. He's very much seen as a continuity Nicola Sturgeon candidate. He even joked during his leadership race that he'd have her on speed dial if he won. And in accepting the position yesterday in his acceptance speech, he said Scotland is a proud European nation and we want to return to the EU. And of course, Scotland voted 62% in favour of staying in the EU, 10% more than the UK as a whole. So that coming through very strongly in him asserting himself as the new leader. And
Naomi, I understand he was the only candidate. Sorry, I didn't mean to talk over you, but he's the only candidate who pledged to continue to fight for, progressive policies regarding transgender people.
Yeah, I mean, the reason surrounding Nicola Sturgeon's surprise resignation have been pored over different theories about what drove that decision, ranging from like internal party strife, of which the transgender issue had caused no insignificant impact, through to worries about stagnant support for Scotland's independence. And of course, in her resignation announcement, she echoed Jacinda Ardern's resignation speech that the toll of the last 8 years had really become too much in the top job for her to continue. But yes, these internal debates exposed some pretty deep fissures within the SNP. Most people in the UK assume that the SNP is a broadly progressive party, but the other main challenger to Humza for the top job was Kate Forbes. And she shocked people quite early on in the campaign by talking about her quite conservative Christian beliefs, saying she wouldn't even have voted for equal marriage.
Heavens above, no. We've just had a fairly long period with a Pentecostal Prime Minister, and locally in New South Wales, an Opus Dei Premier. So, you know, my heart goes out to you. She was actually opposed to same-sex marriage?
Yes, she said that if she'd been an elected official at the time of the vote that equal marriage was introduced, she wouldn't have voted in favour of it. Wow. So that's quite shocking. She's young, you know, she's sort of early 30s. So it's unusual for somebody who ticks many of the other demographic groups that would generally be supportive of LGBT plus rights to take such a different stance on it. I think, though, diversity is something worth mentioning. When we look at what's going on in the UK and then our nearest neighbour in Ireland, we've now got a Hindu Asian Prime Minister of the UK in Rishi Sunak. We've got a Muslim Asian First Minister in Scotland. The Mayor of London is an ethnically Muslim first-generation immigrant, Sadiq Khan. And the Irish Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar, is also of Indian descent. And our Home Secretary and Foreign Secretary are both from minority ethnic groups as well. So the UK is, you know, whether or not you agree with all of their shades of politics, now that many of the offices of state hold by a very, very diverse group of people. And given that almost 10% of the UK is made up of people of Asian descent, the largest ethnic minority group here, it is quite remarkable and probably something many of us didn't see coming a decade ago.
It's a shame that you're treating prospective refugees or asylum seekers as badly as we are. Look, let's hear a bit of Yousaf speaking after his leadership victory.
It is hard for me to find the words to describe just how honoured I am to be entrusted by our membership of the SNP to be the party's next leader and to be on the cusp of being our country's next First Minister. We should all take pride in the fact that today we have sent a clear message that your colour of skin or indeed your faith is not a barrier to leading the country that we all call home. From the Punjab to our parliament, this is a journey over generations that reminds us we should be celebrating and always celebrate the migrants who contribute so much to our country.
Isn't it interesting that his late grandfather comes to Scotland from a small town in Pakistan in 1962 with barely a word of English, and here's his grandson sounding remarkably Scotch.
Indeed. Yes, no, it's a wonderful testament to the diversity that you can now have in politics, which is, you know, as I say, over the last decade, just been transformative. Of course, most of our parliaments in the UK are still heavily dominated by white middle-class men, but there is now hope that that's changing, and there are some excellent role models for the younger generation who hopefully will also throw their hat in the ring and continue this streak of diversity in our body politic.
Now, he's determined to get Scotland a second referendum on independence, an uphill battle.
I think so. So back in 2014, Scotland had a referendum on leaving the Union, and unionists won by 55% to 44%. Yousaf has reasserted, obviously, his commitment to independence because he heads up the Scottish National Party. But actually, even with the disaster of Brexit and 13 years of Conservative government from Westminster, the needle hasn't really moved in Scotland in favour of independence. It was 39% pro-independence, 47% in favour of the Union in a poll for Sky News just a couple of weeks ago. So he's definitely got a sterner challenge on his hands than Sturgeon had at the last election. And that's in no small part because Labour are now slightly back in ascendancy north of the border in Scotland in a way they very much weren't at the last general election, pretty capable of peeling away some SNP votes. And of course, one of the theories behind Sturgeon's departure was that her call to make the next general election a de facto second referendum on independence just hadn't galvanised the support that she'd hoped it would.
We're talking to Naomi Smith. I guess there must be independence fatigue as well.
Maybe. And I think after, you know, several years of pandemic, the impact of Brexit, which people are feeling very, very keenly here in the UK, I hasten to add, more and more reports coming out showing the economic damage, you know, the extra cost that we're facing on food inflation more so than other parts of the world as a result, I think means that people are beginning to reassess whether or not going it alone, even if it might mean you get back into the EU at some point, is worth the economic pain that will come with it.
Let's head south. I mentioned your very tough new immigration policies, which are a carbon copy. a carbon copy of Australia's. What's the fallout been since the government introduced Stop the Boats?
Oh, well, so the government introduced something that they called the Illegal Migration Bill, but to normal people, it's the Anti-Asylum Bill. And Sunak has been selling this as key to delivering on one of his five pledges, and one of those pledges is to stop the small boat crossings that are coming across the English Channel from France. And he says that the bill would permit the mass detention and deportation of people arriving in the UK via irregular means. Now, of course, channel crossings are the inevitable result of a government that has deliberately and systematically closed off those safe, legal established routes to claiming asylum in the UK. So except for Ukrainians fleeing the current conflict there, it is almost impossible for people facing real danger anywhere else in the world to reach the UK in a way that would be deemed acceptable to this government. And it demonstrated absolutely brilliantly by the Home Secretary at a select committee last year when she was asked the simple question of how someone could actually claim asylum to the UK, and she, as Home Secretary, could not answer the question. So I think many of those making the crossings, of course, former British allies, people who were abandoned in Afghanistan after the fall of Kabul, and the government is just using this bill as a smokescreen to distract from their abject failure to reduce the backlog of asylum claimants. We have currently close to 200,000, I think it's over, well over 160,000 currently claiming asylum. They're just being confined in hotels at great taxpayer expense rather than being able to build new lives here, find jobs, pay tax, etc. So the bill is currently getting its second reading in the House of Commons. There's concerns from within the Conservative benches, both from the more extreme right, who want it to go even further and take the UK out of the European Convention on Human Rights, and then those on the slightly softer wing of the party saying, for God's sake, Prime Minister, can you please exclude children from this bill? But no, at the moment they're holding firm.
The UN aren't at all pleased, but we ignored them, and I guess Downing Street can do that as well. Now, let's talk Boris, because last week he faced a grilling from the Privileges Committee over whether he misled the House of Commons about his infamous COVID lockdown parties. Naomi Smith, what happened?
So all of this, as you say, relates back to the Partygate scandal, which was the key thing that brought Johnson down, the rule-breaking which struck such a chord with everyone who made sacrifices, and in many cases, myself included, was unable to be with loved ones when they passed. We abided by the rules, he didn't. So the short summary is that lying to Parliament in the UK is a very, very, very big no-no. And if you're caught doing it intentionally, you can be suspended. And most people understandably believe that Johnson did indeed lie to Parliament when he said he was unaware of any parties in Downing Street. Unaware of parties he was photographed at, I hasten to add. So there's plenty of evidence to show him being ambushed by cake, as he put it, at somebody's leaving do. So a parliamentary inquiry was set up to establish whether he did knowingly lie to Parliament or not. If they think he did, they can recommend a suspension. And if they recommend a suspension that is longer than 10 days, and Parliament approves it, he could face something that's called a recall petition, which basically means his constituents in his constituency of Uxbridge and South Ruislip could call a by-election. And he'd be very unlikely to hold that seat if he faced a by-election.
I think you're being very cruel to Boris. So let's listen to a bit of him in the committee hearing. Roll tape.
Are you saying you thought these gatherings were so critical to the function of government that it was permissible to hold them even if they couldn't be socially distanced?
The short answer is yes. I thought that it was essential to thank staff for their work. I think that even though the pictures seem to show festive events, I think that our efforts, even in those pictures, are being made to do social distancing. And what I saw, what I had in my head when I was talking to the House of Commons, was a memory, a strong memory of people over a long period doing everything they could to stop the spread of disease within the building.
Now, finally, Sunak did have a victory recently, as we discussed on the programme, on that Brexit border deal, Naomi, with Northern Ireland. It had a big win in the House, didn't it?
It did, and it's few and far between that I will praise this Conservative government. However, on this occasion, I do say well done to Sunak. He called it the Windsor framework. So this was a deal that he struck with Ursula von der Leyen of the EU Commission to basically find ways of smoothing the process of transferring goods from Great Britain to Northern Ireland. The Northern Irish Protocol, as many of your listeners will have heard it described. Now, he took that new deal, that new breakthrough, to a vote in the Commons, and it passed with 515 votes for and just 29 against. In the run-up to it, there was all sorts of talks of rebellion from the hard Brexiteers of his party, that he'd have to rely on Keir Starmer's opposition votes to get it through. In the end, he didn't, and he managed to get it through without the need for those opposition votes to pass it. And I think it makes the Brexit fanatics, who were so influential throughout the Brexit disaster days, could muster just 20 votes among their Tory MPs, sends a pretty clear signal that their influence is on the wane. And I do hope that that is true.
And let the record show that PMs Johnson, former PMs Johnson and Truss, both voted against the plan. Naomi, thanks for that. Naomi Smith, Chief Exec with Best for Britain, and you can hear her regularly on the God What Now Political podcast.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.